Clark only had around 150 classers, with about double that of NCCs. Meanwhile, with the influx of migrants from Franksburg and Turtletown, and the slow trickle of people who wanted to find out what the light pillars and villages meant, Donnyton now housed around 1,200 classers and almost 8,000 total members of the village. The council finally found a group of decent architects and was currently designing plans for a larger city area, if just for the market area they needed. Both classers and NCCers were upset at traders from both Franksburg and Kith Clark setting up temporary stalls and areas previously reserved for their training. And considering how much both groups had given in the defense of the town, maintaining the training area seemed the least they could do. Compared to the broader considerations of Donnyton's safety, Glendale found himself much more comfortable when he settled down to commune with the whispers of his ghosts. Franksburg had successfully weathered its own tribulation, mostly due to a monstrous effort by Lucifer, who had to cut out the heart of the tribulation and eat it in order to prevent it from regenerating. Although their tribulation wasn't particularly gifted in magic or illusions, their tribulation was large and almost unkillable. It took 3 days and almost 1,000 lives, but Franksburg made it. And Lucifer, for his actions, earned the strangely specific class, Avenger of Franksburg. The freedom fighters were tight-lipped about the details, but from the secrecy, it was easy to see that it was a powerful class. On the waves of their success, Glendale couldn't stop himself from wondering what that might mean in terms of their own tribulation. After all, the horde it sent in its place pushed Donnyton to its limits. Glendale breathed in and out again, refocusing on the reports from his ghosts. Kirsty was finally released from the house arrest she'd been placed under by her mother upon her return from Kith Clark. She was dancing with several children, and with most of the traders who came from Kith Clark. For whatever reason, the rabbits especially were fascinated with their gifted tree. Their awe expanded when they met the 20-foot-tall original planting, which was wreathed in flame most of the time due to its boughs being thick with leaves. Although a leaf withered and fell every time someone used a skill, there were currently 8 sprouting in Donnyton and 2 in Kith Clark. The rate of Arbor's Blessing spawning had increased greatly, so they came and danced, enjoying the immaculately kept park that surrounded Arbor. Another ghost whispered, distracting Glendale from the celebration. As it had been for the past weeks, Tyke stood at the base of the mountain path, gazing upwards, still unable to muster enough willpower to walk up and approach Raina, who went up there every morning to draw. Her drawings were actually quite popular for portraits and scenery, especially for the changes she recorded over time that demonstrated the rapid evolution Donnyton was experiencing. Some painters involved in the design and construction of the new Donnyton had taken some of her sketches in order to make several great murals. They even interviewed Donnie, Sam, and some of the original classers, getting an idea about how the valley originally looked almost 2 months ago. Of course, the most popular items were sketches of the ghost hound. These were always done in charcoal and in several different varieties. There was even one where he was cooking, which made people dubious. But when you looked at his eyes, Raina had a gift for shading, and in those eyes there was darkness, rage, intensity, and more than anything, concentration. The scenes around him seemed to fade while those eyes remained the same. And for that, people wordlessly bought the drawings, until most people possessed at least one such treasure within their home. Even more shocking to people was that this masked woman, who they thought of as a skilled drawer, announced she would be performing a musical concert. The whole town buzzed with excitement, and Kith Clark's population perked up, curiously optimistic about this strange concert. A sound system was imported from Franksburg in preparation. "And it will happen tonight," Glendale thought to himself. Turning his attention away from Tykes's lonesome figure, Glendale followed his ghosts across the forges, past the area where the numeral 10 was being challenged by the 11th squad, and finally towards the prairie where he found the ghost hound. For whatever reason, this was Glendale's favorite time to watch the ghost hound, the intense and driven man who made this town possible. He stood still, his hands casually wrapped around a spear, 3 strange creatures made of roots near him. Those root creatures each thrust out a spear, and then, after a small delay, the ghost hound himself followed. This continued almost endlessly, every day, but Glendal loved it. Although his own power was incredible and growing daily, when he looked at these strange root beings, it felt like magic. Real magic, in a way that Glendal, no matter how skilled he was, could never match. This was the level of the ghost hound, who created this town and nurtured it to the 10,000 citizen strong city it was approaching being. Eventually, as it was his time to scout, he turned his attention away, flowing it around. Finding nothing more of note, Glendal returned to himself. Four other things of note happened in the past 3 weeks. A pillar of light appeared to their west, signifying another village had been founded, this time without any assistance from the ghost hound. Not a day later, two more appeared to the northwest, in a similar direction, but apart from each other enough that they were clearly separate. After much debate, Donnyton's council decided they would wait to send scouts. There was always the chance that the village would fall to its tribulation. Making contact before they passed that hurdle might be pointless. In addition, a large area in the middle of their zone was discovered to be dotted with monsters between the levels of 28 and 35, where they roamed freely. It was one thing to defend a village from monsters of that level. It was quite another to wander out into a landscape you knew nothing about and attempt to survive, hounded by those monsters. Following the weighted occurrences of new villages and mightier monsters came happier news. First, Sam proposed to Regina, and she said yes. Then, choosing to eschew social norms, Annie announced to the world that she was pregnant. Both of these bits of news created excitement, for different reasons. First, because there was going to be a huge celebration and party for the former, and the latter because, to their knowledge, no babies or toddlers survived the arrival of this system. This baby would be Donnyton's first, perhaps even the first of the whole zone. Glendal overheard Daniel ask Dozer, wonderingly, if he thought the baby would get any bonuses for being the firstborn into the world, and was promptly punched in the gut. There was also a push by Regina and Mrs. Hamilton to change their governing structure. Such talks had stalled in recent days as they attempted to figure out how exactly it would work. In the meantime, Donnyton itself just buckled down and prepared for the night's concert. Daniel looked around the table. "We are in agreement? The communications array can be purchased?" Everyone nodded. Daniel couldn't stop himself from beaming. Glad to finally have this. Afterwards, he immediately opened up his menu and was gratified to finally see the friends option was open. Even more exciting was that it seemed there would be chat and parties available through this. There was even a social tab that displayed all individuals you encountered in the past. Once the communications array had been purchased, it opened the option for communication towers, which effectively gave people within the area a mini-map that displayed different locations of import, allies, and enemies. Daniel was practically drooling. There was a secret here, Randidly knew. He carefully watched the rotation of the energies inside himself, seeking an answer to it. The grass grew and the rock came hungry on its heels, ballooning outward. The fire came, burning it all away, leaving only ash. Randidly focused harder, pressing his will upon the image, bringing his awareness closer to the ash. Ash was... He could see it, glittering darkly on the ground. Although all the biological matter was burnt away, leaving only carbon and trace elements, there was something permanent about the transformation, something that accumulated. His focus narrowed to a needle point as he combed through the soil. Gradually, he understood. Those trace elements were slowly building up. With glittering eyes, Randidly focused closer, witnessing that as the grass grew, it rotted away into a bulging mass of filth, only to be burned away. Rot couldn't consume the ash, and the grass didn't grow out of the ash. It grew out of the ground and water. Instead, the ash remained, the refined little carbon bits from the burnt rot. So as he watched, His soul skill was slowly spreading a layer of ash over this area where ether dwelled, of hardened and refined carbon and other trace minerals. But what was the point of that? What could ash accomplish when it covered the entire land? Randidly opened his eyes, they were green, iridescent, and foreign, as his mind spun. Unless something could be planted in that ash. Unless that bed of ash could be used to nurture something incredible. Dozer looked up, frowning. After taking the mission to help his pet evolve, he'd been thoroughly beaten up and bludgeoned. He used his own body to protect the kitten during its most formative moments against its jealous kin. And due to the limitations of the mission, Dozer had been forced to do it alone. Once back, he kissed Annie, then collapsed onto his bed in a sprawl. He needed time for the system-enhanced healing to restore his body to a functional state, and based on the aches in his limbs. However, when he saw the notification, his expression twisted. Warning, the Tier 3 raid boss has spawned. Swiftly discover whether it spawned in the zone of you or your sister village and hunt it down. The village that earns the kill will be greatly rewarded. All villages who survive the Tier 3 raid boss will receive a reward. But be careful, for just like you, this raid boss has found its own path and wants to walk it to completion.
Was it really that time already?
No rest for the wicked. The system was always throwing another monster in front of him that he needed to kill. Why would it be any different now? In the distance, the celebrations that happened in the wake of Reyna's concert silenced themselves. It seemed everyone understood their brief respite was over. It was once more time to focus on survival.
Tsk, tsk, a single notification and you're already so serious. You already look like a father with that grumpy face, Annie said, yawning as she stretched in bed, arching her back provocatively.
From her positioning, she'd likely been waiting for him to return to consciousness, so she could tease and torture him for such a dismissive greeting on his return. Dozer just grunted, turning away before she could have her way. The safety of Donnyton took precedence.
Where's ears?
Dozer asked. Now that his cat had evolved, it was high time that it pulled its own weight in battle. Annie wrinkled her nose, but somehow made the expression rather endearing.
You know how I feel about animals in bed. Shouldn't we be the ones making the bestial noises?
You know now's not the time, Dozer said.
But he couldn't help but give Annie one long gaze that earned a purr of satisfaction from her throat. He huffed and forced himself to his feet, picking up his leather armor to sling across his torso. Annie, still naked, got up and started tightening the straps.
It's waiting outside for you.
Annie stepped back when Dozer was fully outfitted. She gestured to her own fighting leathers.
I'll be right behind you.
You shouldn't fight like that, he said simply, hoping she would listen to him just this once.
Annie was many wonderful things, but obedient was not one of them.
Well, obviously I'll get dressed first.
No. You know what I mean, Dozer said, turning back to her. What if the baby?
Her eyes became round and sad.
What about you? Will you fight like that? Knowing your death means someone will carry an emptiness inside of them always? Do you know what it's like? Not having a...
She trailed off and bit her lip. Not provocatively, just emotionally. And for the first time since they'd met, Dozer saw fear in her eyes. And to see that vulnerability, the reality of the situation soaked through his battle-focused professionalism. He was 20 and going to be a father? And he had to fight monsters? Teach other people to fight? The weight of the responsibility pressed heavily against him in that moment. It was strange how quickly his life had changed. In the past, Dozer would have gone out and hooked up with some random chick, fucking her until his cum drowned out his worries. But now, he could only close his eyes. They really couldn't back out now, and he didn't want to. He pictured the ghost hound's luminous emerald eyes, possessing enough power to suppress the whole of Donnyton's fighting force. He opened his eyes and began to speak.
You.
Immediately, Annie's eyes changed from vulnerable to vicious. Dozer's mouth slowly closed.
Even if I tell her to stay away, she won't listen. His heart ached. So much was riding on their two lives. If either of them died, was life always this fragile? He wondered. In the face of Annie's desperate look, he relented. Just make sure you stay safe out there. If you need help, call for me. I'll rescue you, no matter what. Annie nodded meekly and walked into his embrace, her fingers going to the spot the spell from the ghost hound had ripped a hole in his bicep when Dozer protected her. They stood like that, silent and still for several minutes, until the summons from Glindel's ghosts arrived. Annie flounced herself, doing her best to look contrite in his field of vision. His enhanced perception didn't miss the way she played it up around him, but now he also knew she truly felt fear. Annie was not a simple woman, Dozer thought, as he hefted his huge club over his shoulder. But she was his. That's all he needed. Chapter 37 Lyra looked up sharply, due to the individual that appeared next to her. In the chaos of Donnington marshaling all its force against the threat of the Tier 3 raid boss, it was easy to miss a single person. But his dark hair and bright eyes immediately created a magnetic pull that her eyes of wonder couldn't resist. She forced her face into a grin, trying to keep her voice light.
You going to help with the raid boss, Randidly?
He immediately shook his head. His stern expression didn't falter for a second. This is mostly my fault, for losing track of time. We haven't made many preparations, but considering the Tribulation was probably watching us the entire time, maybe this is for the best. It will not miss this chance. With Donnington distracted, it will strike. You need to strike first. Lyra blinked several times.
You mean?
Yes, I'm going. I need to pay back my debt to the man who taught me the spear. Randidly's hand tightened around a small object he held. He looked down at it and frowned for a split second. Then he shook his head. My disappearance will definitely attract the Tribulation's attention, so I'm going to wait for a few hours, gather a small team, and get in position. Then, I'll vanish, likely causing it to take precautions. Then?
Then in the moment after it realizes you're really gone,
Lyra said slowly,
it will relax, and I strike.
Randidly smiled. We didn't mean for it to work that way, but it looks like we've gained a pretty good understanding of each other through the question bet.
You think it wasn't purposeful?
Lyra felt somewhat bitter, but she refused to let it show. She was, after all, a former actress. Instead, she smirked.
Let's do this, then. Let's save Donnington.
Randidly shook his head slowly, and he put his hand on her shoulder. She was abruptly aware of the difference in their height as he towered over her. His fingers squeezed very lightly. Not us. This time, it's you, Lyra. You've got this. Then he was gone, moving through the press of bodies toward the mountain over Donnington. Dozer walked out of his tent and rolled his shoulders, leaning his massive club up against a nearby wooden post. In a blur of cobalt fur, Dozer's exiled pet pounced forward, tackling him to the ground and using her rough tongue to lick his face.
All right, all right.
Dozer rubbed Ears's head and patted her sides.
Don't let Annie see you doing too much of that, or she'll get jealous.
Dozer grinned. He'd sort of forgotten how thin the tent material was. He shifted the massive cat off his chest.
Let me get a look at you.
About the size of a pony, the gleaming cobalt feline looked at Dozer with innocent eyes, but he knew that belied her true power. She had a long, pearly horn on her forehead and dagger-sharp claws. He opened up his status screen and nosed through his pet status in the pet area. River Drop Puma can earn experience. Level 15. Survivability 4. Physicality 5. Mentality 7. Peculiarity 7. Special skills Water Slash. Mist Bellow. Daniel hurried up to him.
Dozer, There you are. It's time to go. We have reports about the Tier 3 raid boss.
Dozer quirked an eyebrow. It's on our side, huh?
About that, Daniel hesitated. Glindel discovered a raid boss on our side, but now we're hearing from Kith Clark that they're encountering monsters as well. As far as we can tell, the Tribulation is disguising a clone as one of them, to split our forces.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Dozer waved one hand while scratching his cat's ear with the other.
So, what raid boss is on our side?
Fire-breathing sheep.
Daniel sputtered.
If nothing else, we've certainly gotten better at mobilizing quickly,
Annie mused to herself, joining Declan in reinforcing Kith Clark. They formed up with a band of turtle crossbow users and rabbit beaters and marched west. They encountered two oddities almost right away. Most of the trees in the area had been felled, and the river they followed began to dry up.
Is this common?
Declan asked the leader of the turtles. The anthropomorphic animal shook his head, clearly uncomfortable. Annie wished she could climb a tree and use her powerful eyes to get a sense of their foes. Thanks to their opponents clear-cutting the forest for whatever reason, that option was voided. The group crept along, circling the edges of the stacks of felled trees, anticipating an ambush. Annie growled and scanned their group. Dozer would be best, but...
Hey, you!
She pointed at a muscular-looking rabbit. The rabbit seemed to be of relatively low ranking, looking around in confusion, as though expecting he'd misheard. Then he pointed at his chin.
Wait, me?
Can you see my finger? Who the hell else could I be pointing at?
Annie grumbled as she walked forward and wove her fingers together.
Here, see this? Do this with your hands, and when I step on it, throw me up.
The rabbit's eyes flicked left and right, but none of the Kith Clark warriors came to his aid. Finally, he relented and did as asked. To her pleasant surprise, when he tossed her, she went relatively high. The rabbit's furred arms hid a deceptive amount of strength. Annie flew up and up, savoring the sensation of weightlessness as she showed off with several backflips. Her skirt fluttered, revealing the entirety of her legs. Then she began to fall, landing gracefully on the grassy ground.
See anything? Declan asked.
Beavers. Giant, gold-toothed beavers, Annie said. They're making a veritable fortress farther up the river. And I hope,
she indicated the turtles' crossbows,
you have something with a little more kick than arrows.
Lyra stood on a low hill while Donnington's forces marched toward the possible Tier 3 raid boss group. About 50 black wool sheep stood at the edges of the Badlands, those on the front line spewing long sprays of flame that functioned like flamethrowers. The leader, a ram, double the size of the others with curling crimson horns, unleashed a powerful bray, and the sheep formed up into small clusters. When three sheep breathed fire at the same time, the length of the flamethrower nearly doubled. Physical projectiles and arcane orbs could still smash apart their formation, but it made it very difficult for Donnington's warriors to approach.
Aegis!
Donnie raised his sword, and a golden light settled across Dozer's group. Dozer grinned and gestured at his lovely pet, which sauntered over and unleashed a powerful belch. In the next instant, a wall of mist flowed down the slope and obscured Lyra's vision of Donnington's forces in its rush toward the sheep. The ram leader cried again, and the sheep unleashed several gouts of flame. The moisture in the mist was thick, and the power of arcing fire couldn't penetrate very far. The sheep began to retreat, but the mist's approach was too swift. And when there was only a meter between the mist and the sheep, Dozer leapt, streamers of mist clinging to his arms. His massive weapon practically popped several sheep as it crushed them against the ground. Behind him, his feline companion followed, and her sharp claws ripped out the throats of a few unfortunate monsters so fast that Lyra wasn't certain if she could survive an ambush from that creature. Dozer's squad came in hard, impacting the front line of sheep and destroying the long-range flamethrower groupings. With mist still present and the sheep struggling, Donnie raised his sword again, and Donnington's other squads marched into battle. Lyra opened up a message to Randedly.
The two raid bosses are engaged. This is definitely a chance, but after the sanctuary, Kim Lath fears you. Unless you are gone, it won't commit. So I think it's time.
After she sent the message, she regarded the marching warriors. She chewed on her lip.
I need something to do. Something to be doing when Kim Lath checks where I am, so it doesn't understand I know where it is, too.
Then she blinked.
Maybe it's time to go check on those princesses.
Randedly stood above Donnington when the message popped up in front of him. The wind curling up the valley rustled his hair.
This is the effect of the communications array. The more we grow, the more this system makes the world like a game.
He regarded the small token Daniel purchased for him, at Shaw's direction. A single word was burned into the token. Telus. His hand tightened around it as he prepared to activate it. Right before he squeezed and snapped the token to pieces, he hesitated.
Is it really all right for me to leave the issue of the tribulation to someone else?
He shook his head, squashing the doubt.
I've watched Lyra improve. I fought against all of Donnington and felt their resolve and creativity. They could catch up to me with their own hands. Now that they've had time to develop, they can handle the tribulation of many faces. Honestly, I feel bad for you, Randedly said.
Partially to make his support concrete, but perhaps also to assure himself that this was the right decision.
They're going to rip you to pieces.
From the sheer pressure of his squeezed fist, the token snapped. Glowing blue runes appeared on the ground. Randedly had a moment where he could make out their details. Then everything swirled around him, carrying him up and away. His body wrenched and twisted, pulled in so many directions at once. Blessedly, he felt solid ground beneath his feet. Randedly fell to his knees, unable to stop coughing. That was profoundly uncomfortable. Before the system came to the world, Randedly considered himself a person with an iron stomach and a rock-solid inner ear. He'd never even experienced motion sickness. With the benefits afforded to him by his vitality and endurance, he figured it was physically impossible. With the strange, shaking feeling over, Randedly finally gave in to the nausea and vomited.
That's going to cost you extra,
a voice dryly said. Randedly's stomach heaved again. He cared very little who spoke. Right now, he needed desperately to deal with the very real possibility that all of his organs had switched places.
Ha! It is well worth it. The fact he is still conscious is a good sign. Certainly my disciple.
Another, far more amused voice sounded. Even stricken by the sickness, Randedly was able to wipe his mouth and look up.
Shaw?
The word proved too much for him. Randedly's face turned green, and he once more began to vomit.
Bang!
The wood splintered and shattered, the hinges ripped from the wall. The doors collapsed in a pile of dust, and Lyra stepped through, finding two shocked guards, both at least well-trained enough to reach for their sidearms. Before they could bring the pistols to bear, Lyra crossed her arms, using her elbows as a support, pointing a finger gun at each man. Recently, in Donnington, there had been a growing philosophical movement in regards to the morality of killing another human. Sure, they killed monsters, but with the arrival of the connection with another village looming over them, one question in particular found its way across many of their lips. Was killing another intelligent being acceptable? Lyra wasn't a philosopher, but she'd watched Randedly move through the monster horde on that first night, blood blooming around him like crimson lilies, wilting in the next second, leaving nothing but death. She never forgot how beautiful it was, and how much it stank.
Why don't you take a nap?
She said sweetly, as she activated the skill she learned from watching Kim Lath. The eyelids of the two guards fluttered, and they collapsed. Congratulations, your skill, Sleeping Wave, uncommon, has grown to level 12. She looked over her shoulder, through the door, at the wide-eyed trio comprised of Vivian, Cal, and the tongueless Constance, smiling slightly.
Ready for your daring rescue, princesses?
Lyra, you...
Cal's breathy words were silenced by a decisive cut from Constance. The village chieftain gestured emphatically. They were following Lyra.
Who has been cutting out your tongue without Bobby Taka around?
Lyra asked, having heard from Mrs. Hamilton about the chaos surrounding Turtletown. Constance's face creased. He gestured emphatically several times. Shaking her head, Vivian stepped forward.
He claims that several people maintained his prison, one of them being Bobby Taka. He even said Craig came a few times to do it himself.
That earned a frown from Lyra, but she simply filed that information away. That was a problem for later. Inwardly, Lyra's monosense followed Kim Lath's movements. Even now, she kept the tracer it left on her active. It should have sensed randomly leaving the planet, and now her moving on Turtletown. Hopefully...
Gotcha,
Lyra grinned. Her lock on the true body of Kim Lath began to move. She understood Randidly's fear, that the tribulation would hide in the shadows and continue to snipe at Donnyton for the foreseeable future. But she also had a better understanding of the tribulation from their interactions. She also understood something Randidly sometimes forgot, what it felt like to be weak. The tribulation might have hidden it well the last time their paths crossed, but it was clear it had something particular planned in the house above the waterfall. Randidly's decisive actions and surprising power ruined those plans, which made it afraid. That sort of fear usually motivated people to take action. Not when Randidly was there, of course. Now that he'd gone, Kim Lath closed in on...
Donnyton?
Lyra frowned and turned to the other three.
Let's do a bit of digging then, before I rush back. Before he was apparently at liberty to help shred your tongue, where were they keeping Craig?
Constance pointed down. The 10th floor. Lyra blithely took the elevator down. Just as she expected, they were greeted by a face of absolute surprise when they came off the elevator and walked around the corner, finding a guard station in front of one of the rooms. As the guards scrambled to their feet, Lyra waved her hand, and birds formed of mana swooped, ripping large chunks of flesh out of their legs and hands. Crying and bleeding, they collapsed. Lyra opened the door and found Craig chained to a chair, barely conscious. Even Constance moved to his side, his face conflicted and confused. Lyra removed a mana and health potion from her pocket, drinking the former and passing the latter to Vivian, who began dripping it into Craig's lips. He very much did not look like a man who had been complicit in the suppression of Constance over the last few weeks.
Princess number 4,
Lyra said, forcing her voice to sound cheery and mask how disturbed she was by the gore she created. Her connection to Kim Lath thrummed through her mind, and she forced out a breath. Kim Lath was definitely doing something in Donnyton. She focused on the four of them.
Try and reestablish control of Turtletown. I'm willing to bet things will be a little chaotic for the foreseeable future.
She blinked out, hurrying back to Donnyton. As she did, Lyra activated her eyes of wonder. She'd noticed it before, but the village provided tethers of ether from Newell to all the individuals who received classes from Donnyton. The web of energy flared to life in the surrounding area. Quite a bit of power flowed north, where Donnie and Dozer continued to fight against the fire-breathing sheep. But now, a shadow crept at the edge, where Kim Lath forced its way into the middle of that energy web. Lyra brought another potion to her lips and blinked several times in succession. After randomly pushed her limits in their attack on the sanctuary, the distance she could cover greatly increased. Now it only took emptying her mana pool 4 times to completely return. She stumbled into Donnyton's fortified central hill with a throbbing headache. The surrounding was too quiet for her comfort. She sat down and began to meditate to calm her spirit and recover.
Come on, she whispered. Commit, Kim Lath. I'm nearby, but I'm just here to rest. I don't sense you at all. And once you commit...
Kim Lath hovered at the edge, as though considering. Then he pounced. A ripple ran through the energy web. With her eyes of wonder, Lyra saw Newell begin to engage in some spectral struggle with him. She decisively crushed the tracker Kim Lath had on her. He froze in response, giving Newell the second he needed to fight back. Lyra used the pinch of mana she recovered to blink again, arriving at Donnyton's central point. She barged through the door of the lodge, finding Kim Lath standing over Newell. Even with that hesitation, the tribulation seemed more powerful than the village spirit.
What the hell is he doing?
Lyra thought in alarm.
Help me, please, Newell mewed. If he kills me...
You noticed my tracker, clever girl.
Kim Lath spoke over his shoulder as he continued to engage in the invisible battle with the writhing Newell.
Ha! Did you think you alone would be enough to stop me? It doesn't matter that you made it here. Soon, I will devour Donnyton's village spirit, and all of the people here will transform into monsters that will be forced to do my bidding. A fitting revenge against Randed the Ghost Hound for humiliating me, don't you think?
I'll stop you,
Lyra wheezed. Her vision shook from her words, her mental strength painfully overdrawn. The mana potions were helping, but she needed time to recover. Which, of course, Kim Lath would never give her. He gestured.
Will you? Because first you need to defeat your precious ghost hound. Is it funny, or just sad that he still doesn't realize how you feel about him?
Lyra flushed. A clone split off Kim Lath's main body and formed indurandedly. He raised his spear, leering at her. As soon as Lyra started gathering her mana, condensing two mana birds, he accelerated forward. Lyra was surprised when two measly birds were enough to hem the clone in and slice it in half. Compared to the actual Randedly, even with the same stats, the difference was immense.
You're really weak, aren't you?
Weak?
Kim Lath's features twisted. His hand stretched out and seized upon Newell's throat.
Don't you dare take another step. If you do, I...
Just like Randedly,
Lyra whispered, and once more scrapped all the mana she could manage and unleashed a powerful burst.
Strike before he can rely on plans.
Congratulations, your skill Mana Flare has grown to level 32. The superheated hunk of mana surged outward, incinerating Kim Lath's flesh. More than that, Lyra had a lock on his core. When the tribulation rushed to try and move it to the side, Lyra reached out with the last inch of her will and nudged the projectile so it smashed that core to pieces.
You!
Kim Lath collapsed sideways. Its flesh melted, and its spirit began to fade. One last flash of cruelty appeared in its eyes. Its hand, still around Newell's neck, tightened and snapped. Newell's eyes glazed over, and the village spirit collapsed with the tribulation. For several seconds, Lyra could only sway and breathe. She might have remained there, had not the guttural laughter of Kim Lath brought her back. Barely alive, its body puddling into goop, the tribulation grinned at her.
The village spirit has died. Donnyton will fall. You stupid child. You should not have killed me.
He pulled into paste, no longer on earth. Lyra's eyes rose to view the web of ether that spread out from the corpse of Newell. The energizing red-violet radiance of ether began to dim. A link in the chain had been severed. With the death of Newell, energy no longer flowed out. Starting from the central point, the light began to dim through all the connections. Between the understanding, the pain in her head, and the rising tide of panic, it was all too much. She fell to the ground, her limbs boneless. Tears began to form in the corners of her eyes.
Randedly trusted me. I worked so hard to convince him that I could handle this. And now...
Lyra could see it. The way the whole of Donnyton would lose their access to ether with Newell dead. Some weaker individuals might survive. but the more powerful classers just had too many stats and skills. Without the village spirit supporting them, they would succumb to what they'd just begun to understand as ether deprivation. Most would fall into comas. The remainder would be cripples due to the onset weakness. Perhaps they could find another way to supply them with energy. But in the short term, Donnington, as they knew it, would collapse.
No.
Lyra pinched her eyes shut to cease crying.
I need to handle this. I made a promise. What would Randidly do right now?
Lyra forced her eyes open to examine the rapidly deteriorating situation. The puddle remnants of Kim Lath and the collapsed Newell. The darkening web of energy bringing with it the rapidly approaching doom of Donnington.
He would do whatever it took.
Lyra's eyes began to glow.
He would make whatever sacrifice was necessary to save Donnington.
And suddenly, Lyra knew what she had to do. An hour later, wearing a set of robes given to him by Shaul, Randidly followed his master down a cobblestone path in the jungle, where long, ropey vines connected all the surrounding trees. Shaul was the same as Randidly remembered him, a tall, athletic man with a spear in hand. He had the same closed third eye in the middle of his forehead and a bluish tint to his skin, but otherwise he looked rather human.
Thank you for coming,
was the single phrase Shaul said, striding along the paved route. They had been walking for most of the previous hour, beginning the journey as soon as Randidly seemed well enough to move.
It was only because of you that I was able to survive in the system. I am a man who pays the debts he owes,
Randidly said, though admittedly he was slightly distracted. At the same time, he sent a message through his newly created Friends tab in his system menu to Lyra.
Keep me updated on what happens.
He immediately cursed. He could send messages, but receiving messages was probably blocked by the potion he'd taken for training. Besides that constant worry and being so far from Donnington he wouldn't be able to help, came the other issue he'd buried within himself. Will his training have been enough to impress Shaul? Obviously, he had improved. His spear phantom's footwork and the accuracy of his thrusts were honed through Mrs. Hamilton's training methods. Plus, his continued use of root manipulation, summon pestilence, and circle of flame had vastly increased the power of those skills, especially root manipulation. Even more intimidating was his growing ability to flex his mana to create slightly more power in the spell, and with his intelligence nearing 100, a slight extra boost in efficacy could accomplish a lot. His time spent training his use of the spear through the root avatar also created an added benefit. He now had a more vivid picture of what the spear could do. Randidly somehow knew that if he used the first move of his created skill, the spear advances, ash trails, the powerful understanding he'd gained, both from his phantom thrust training and the root avatar time, would result in a drastically increased power and skill level. Shaul paused and listened to the wind whipping through the surrounding trees. Randidly grimaced.
Hopefully the fact I'm still under the effect of that strange black potion won't matter. I wonder how long it'll take to wear off.
Once Shaul was satisfied, they began to move. This time, he increased his speed to a trot and looked over his shoulder at Randidly. He weighed him with his gaze for several seconds, then turned to keep his eyes on the cobblestone trail.
From what I can see, you still do not have a class.
No, I don't, Randidly said. Shaul sighed.
It is a pity. I suspect your world is not afflicted with the great drought, like mine is. Still, it is no matter. After a bit of training, I expect that you will be able to at least maintain the style's prestige. But here, take this.
Shaul tossed something underhand back toward Randidly. The small projectile was so unexpected he fumbled to catch it. When he finally had a firm grip, he looked at it in puzzlement. It looked like an inhaler.
This is...
liquid life, we call it. Others refer to it as the spearman's tears or essence. But the label doesn't matter.
Shaul came to a split in the path, the continued cobblestones and dirt. He went right without pausing, though the cobblestones led left, Randley didn't hesitate to follow his master onto the unpaved trail.
It is the most precious resource on the planet. There are two drops in that. Use it when you feel the beginnings of ether sickness.
Randley's expression twisted. He fixated his senses on the small inhaler, and gradually the familiar pulse from within the container opened to him.
This thing holds ether.
His own thin network of the fiery and chilling energy pulsed in his chest, as though dismissive of any foreign power. While Randley tried to understand why even classers would require ether in the form of an inhaler, they wound their way along the dirt track. The tree canopy above was so dense, only the occasional sunbeam could break through the foliage to illuminate the path. Shaul slowed to a calm stride, his desire to talk expended. Randley sighed, accepting the outcome. That was the M.O. of Shaul, after all.
So, this is the Nexus? Randley eventually asked.
Apparently, his comment was so amusing, Shaul flashed him a smile.
Ha! No, pupil. This is not the Nexus. The Nexus does not exist. Or at least if it does, it is far beyond our ability to reach. This is simply my homeworld, which is a member of the fifth cohort of the Nexus. Now, be still. You will want to see this.
They walked around a bend in the path, and Randley was shocked to discover they were at the edge of a cliff. To their left and right, a sheer rock face dropped down to meet with the crash of reddish water. A rather dangerous-seeming rope bridge led downwards, connecting to dozens of other ropes, until it resembled a strange spiderweb. Floating before them, taking up most of the area below, were boats, hundreds and hundreds of boats, and a riot of color among them drew his eye. They all flew sails of orange, red, yellow, and light blue. Rarely there was darker cobalt popping out of surrounding boats. On top of the strangely colored water, it was quite striking. The boats appeared to be tightly lashed together in places, bobbing up and down in a massive interconnected wooden quilt. All around, people came and went, hopping from boat to boat. Shaul gestured broadly to Randley.
Come, come. We must hurry. All will be explained in my quarters, and we must test how disciplined you were in your training, eh? Welcome to Katal, the floating city.
Violent tremors ran through Lyra's body like she'd grabbed onto a bucking bronco with one hand and a lightning bolt with the other. Capillaries burst along her eye, flooding her vision with blood. She tried to cry out, but her voice wouldn't come. Her diaphragm had seized shut. Lyra writhed on the ground, throwing herself into the crucible to save Donnyton. The ether ceased flowing because Newell died. He'd been the conduit, and with his death, the energy had no way of reaching the classers of Donnyton. In her mind, there was only one option. Lyra needed to become that conduit. She had to corral the dangerous flow of ether through her body and direct it to the people of Donnyton. The pain made it difficult to concentrate. Even while the ether slammed into her humanity again and again, reshaping it and leaving her frozen in agony, her mind began to drift. Instantly, Randley filled her mind's eye. She recalled the mild gaze he used to weigh and assess everyone. She recalled her endless frustration as he examined her in the same way, hoping for a shift. Some change in that mild look. Some proof she wasn't working so tirelessly every day, every night, for nothing. Wishing for some indication he viewed her differently than everyone else. For some indication that she was... Lyra tried to smile, but her face was locked. In the end, she pictured Randley the day he'd left. As he grew stronger, so did the dominance of his aura, growing larger and more multifarious, taking aspects of all of his choices, paths, and skills.
This is for you,
Lyra shuddered as another wave of ether slammed against her. This time, something shifted. She lost something, but she gained something too. Because ether began to flow through her and spread out across the web of classes throughout Donnyton. Then, just like Kim Lath before its death, the human Lyra Silver began to melt into a shapeless blob of gray goo. As they descended through the rope bridges to the edge of the boats in the copper-colored shallows, Randedly paused and looked toward the shore. Instantly, his eyebrows knitted together.
Shaw, those people...
Don't look at them for too long. Attention aggravates them.
Shaw grunted as he hopped down and planted his feet on the deck of the boat. The vessel bobbed slightly with his weight. Shaw shook his head.
That is exactly why I needed your assistance. If you do not succeed, we will soon end up like them. Or at least I will. Huh. You can always escape back to your own planet.
Despite the peculiar joke from Shaw, Randedly felt his skin crawl. Along the shoreline were a mass of huts and shacks, seeming to only remain standing because so many of them leaned together. Even compared to the construction of early Donnyton, these looked primitive and haphazard. Above the mass of buildings were flags, just like the sails on the boats. However, unlike the sails, all of these flags were dull gray and contained the same symbol, a plus sign with a semicircle on the right side, resembling a sideways anchor. The worst part were the people. At first, he thought they were corpses. They sprawled along the beach, barely even stirring when the waves lapped up against their legs. Others hunched on top of pieces of driftwood, their bones protruding out of gray skin that matched the flags above their dwellings. Then he saw a few moving, seeming to lean and stagger rather than walk, barely able to stay upright as they moved. As he examined the area, more and more of them became apparent, slumped up against the sides of buildings or sprawled out next to long dead beach fires. Hundreds of these gray beings stacked like dolls after the puppeteer grew bored. One met Randedly's gaze. The pale light coming from those hollow eyes made him flinch. And once one seemed to notice him, they all began to turn. Shaw grabbed Randedly's shoulder and jerked him.
As I say, do not look for too long. Most of those who have had the ether sickness settle permanently into their bodies are quite weak, but others take a different path. Do not underestimate them.
After being rushed through a press of bodies as they swung down the ropes to the boat city and hurried across several wooden decks, Randedly was led below decks on a small, worn boat. An old man sitting on the deck spared them a glance as they went below, and his eyes closed once more, appearing to be in meditation. When they reached the main area within, Randedly was surprised to find the boat was even bigger down here than he'd thought. It was a square, 5-meter by 5-meter room. The only problem, in Randedly's mind, was the swaying of the location due to being on the water. Shaw took his spear off his back, turning to face Randedly. A familiar smile spread across his face.
Now, first, let us see how rusty you have become.
Randedly almost rolled his eyes, but obligingly removed his spear from his spatial ring. He would do anything to shake the numbness he felt from receiving the pale gaze of those pitiable individuals living on the beach. Randedly tightened his grip on the weapon, pushing away those memories with tactile reinforcement. This was not the weighted training spear, nor was it simply a wooden pole. Instead, it was a simple thing of shaped bone made for him by Sam while the spine spear was remade. It did not have the weight or size of his previous spear, but it was still the spear he was becoming most accustomed to. Shaw's eyes critically scanned the weapon, then he nodded.
At least you have not been dirtying your hands with unnecessary trash. A simple spear is best. Come.
Unlike Shaw's invitation, Shaw was the one who rushed forward, spear raised. Randedly started using Spear Phantom's footwork, crossing the distance to Shaw and shifting around to his side. Just as he was in position, Randedly's eyes widened. Shaw all but disappeared, reappearing in a position ready to attack Randedly in his blind spot. Almost instinctively, he moved again, dodging to the side, but again Shaw was quicker and reappeared right where Randedly attempted to move to, thrusting towards him. Gritting his teeth, Randedly swept his spear up, blocking the blow. It was a close thing, too, because Shaw's attack was quick, but not so quick it couldn't be caught. However, when their spears crossed, there was only one word to describe Shaw's attack. Heavy. Heavy like a blow from Dozer would be. Randedly spun to the side and activated Haste and Empower, using Phantom Thrust. With just a slight body sway, Shaw was able to avoid the strike, and before Randomly could react, another thrust rumbled heavily towards him. Changing his grip on the spear, Randomly switched to a ghastly slash, bringing his spear down on the oncoming attack, knocking it to the side. But in that moment, Shaw stepped, twisting and raising his spear again, quicker than Randomly could believe. Randomly used Phantom Half-Step directly backwards, creating a small amount of distance. But when he attempted to reset his stance, he bumped into the back wall. Shaw attacked viciously, aiming for that small hesitation. Randomly's spear flashed forward to meet it, and was able to deflect it slightly. Seeing his chance, Randomly went for another phantom thrust, but the ship swayed abruptly, making the attack falter. Slightly pissed off, Randomly used Spear Phantom's footwork and circled around to the side, attempting to open up some more space for himself. Again and again those heavy thrusts came, smashing him back until he found himself cornered, desperately lashing out to keep the blows from reaching him. Right when Randomly thought he was going to have to do something drastic to escape, Shaw stopped.
If nothing else, you have earned yourself some calluses while you were lazing about. Your grip is childish, but firm, and you have become passable at fleeing. Congratulations. Come, sit. We must speak of your mission.
Feeling strangely disappointed that the fight hadn't escalated, Randomly moved to the space Shaw indicated. After clearing his throat, Shaw began to speak.
On my world, you are known by two things. Primarily, your school, which is important for distasteful reasons, but most importantly, by your style. We are, of course, the Spear Phantom style, of the Spearman school. Our style emphasizes speed and control of distance. In this regard, you can be considered passably talented, due to your skills and fleeing ability. Every 5 years, a member of the youngest generation of each style must accomplish one of many certain tasks in order to maintain the honor of the style. Only then will their style remain upon the great list for their respective school. In our case, the Spearman School. Shaw grimaced. Unfortunately, the schools have a very generous definition on who is counted, and they use tools granted to them by the system in order to select. You have been selected. As the youngest in our style, you must accomplish these tasks. Otherwise, our allotment of liquid life will be reduced to zero, and we will become one of the Forsaken. Now, you may ask questions.
Randomly pondered for a second. After seeing the beach, he didn't need to ask who the Forsaken were. And although he might have the ability to make do without foreign ether, most other people could not. But wait, shouldn't classes... Randomly frowned until another term Shaw had thrown out there echoed in his head. The Great Drought. He shook himself and focused on the current issue. This goal had to be accomplished, and only Randomly could do it.
How many styles and schools are there? They all have to do these every 5 years?
Shrugging, Shaw said,
there are as many styles as there are stars. Thousands make the Spearman school list every 5-year cycle. As for schools, there are four. Spearman, Spear, Death, and Heart. They are essentially the different countries of Telos.
Filing away this information, Randomly wondered what else he should be curious about. Then his expression brightened.
If it has to be me, there is no one else in our style? Are all styles so small? Not always, but ours is very small. The Spear Phantom, who founded this style, was my father. He has died. Only you and I remain to uphold our honor. Other styles possess hundreds of disciples at every generation, and their disciples typically show more promise than you.
Randomly didn't take the insult to heart. His main focus was magic anyway, even if he'd recently been working very hard to raise the skill of his spear.
What are these tasks? There are several challenges.
Shaw explained the tasks. They seemed focused on different aspects of ability with a spear, like speed, strength, endurance, etc. But Randomly believed he would be able to handle them. Randomly raised his hands.
When does it begin?
Shaw looked at him for a long moment before he spoke.
The deadline is 2 months. In that time, we will be training with one goal in mind, to place in the top 8 in the Spearman Northern Province tournament. But, he looked randomly up and down, with your current strength, it is impossible.
Chapter 38. Randomly sat in a small side room, slightly nauseous from the constant bobbing of the boat, thinking about how he wanted to proceed. As a man, Randidly was someone who always studiously returned favors to whom he owed debts. He owed Shawl a very large debt. Shawl had protected Randidly, trained him, taught him to use the spear, helped him learn how to distribute stats, and much, much more. Shawl was the reason he wasn't still struggling in that small room in the first dungeon, stuck there forever. If he hadn't come along, would Randidly have been able to train up to the point he could survive there? For even if Randidly managed to survive in the dungeon, it would have taken him a long, long time to figure out the possible methods for leaving. He would have wandered for quite a long time, and without Shawl's strength, it would have been almost impossible to escape. Part of Randidly wondered whether it wouldn't have been better to have spent more time training in the time compression of the dungeon while he could take advantage of it. But if he had stayed there too long and a judgment descended. Shawl's interference accelerated things, sure, but they also focused him on more efficient skills, plus the Spear Phantom skills were the basis of his close combat. Randidly was very aware that Shawl went easy on him in their brief spar, refraining from even using his skills. Even so, the thrusts Shawl attacked with were impossibly powerful, able to completely suppress just one of Randidly's strikes. In addition, as Shawl stated, the Spear Phantom style focused on speed and controlling space, aspects that Shawl didn't even need to leverage in order to defeat Randidly. When asked how powerful the competitors in the tournament would be, Shawl informed him that there were 3 main categories, under level 25, under level 50, and under level 100. As Randidly would be entering in the under 25, they would not be nearly as strong as Shawl, but they would be strong enough to make Shawl serious in a fight, which was not a place where Randidly was now. And Katal was a small city in the northern province. There would be thousands of spear users participating in the regional tournament, fighting to gain experience against strong foes. Even if Randidly were to somehow approach a level of skill that would make him a contender, there was the very real chance he would simply be ground down by the sheer number of fights he needed to go through in order to reach the final 8 of the tournament. Shawl opined that a conservative number of required wins would be 100. Across 100 fights, one mistake would lead him to disappointing Shawl's expectations and allow the Spear Phantom style to fall from the list. And after all Shawl had done for him. It was pointless to think about now. The real question was whether Randidly would be willing to consider getting a class in order to assist Shawl. On the one hand, Randidly was rather satisfied with the level his skills reached. Not that he wouldn't want more, but he believed his current strength was enough to earn him a high-tiered class. It might not be something like Sovereign of Ghosts that Glindel lucked into, but it would certainly be a level higher than Knight or Brute. Randidly's expression darkened. On the other hand, the continued threat of judgment certainly was a reason to avoid staying classless. But with his ether situation solved, and the threat of ether starvation a distant possibility, it was only the cold threat of the system pushing him towards getting a class. And Randidly really didn't want to negotiate with anyone who would resort to threats to get what they wanted. Still, it would be a risk to refuse to take a class. And in his heart, Randidly believed he owed enough to Shawl that he should consider the option. Ultimately, though, as he had always known in his heart, that was not his path. Perhaps if he failed in the tournament, he would have time to revisit the class issue and try again. For now, Randidly wanted to continue down this path of strength. Randidly laughed aloud because he realized Shawl was the one who set him walking down this path in the first place. The more he thought about it, the more he believed Shawl wouldn't want him to make a decision he was uncomfortable with in order to assist him, even if the honor of the Spear Phantom style was at risk. Shaul was the one who taught him that all he could do is hold tight to his spear and advance, pushing forward to the future. Almost reflexively, Randidly pulled up his menu. To his surprise, after a long second, the screen slowly formed in the air in front of him. Standing straighter, he went to his Friends tab to check for messages. Several hours had passed since he'd come to Tellus. The issues with Donnington should be resolved. Unfortunately, the Friends screen died after a few flickering attempts. Randidly grimaced. It seemed like it used too much connectivity for the information to gather. The black potion hadn't completely worked its way out of his system yet. Balancing anxiety with excitement, Randidly brought up his status screen. It was a long time coming, this giant expenditure of the path points, and he was somewhat eager to see if he'd gained a lot. As with the Friends tab, the screen crawled into existence and flickered in and out of view. It seemed the strange potion also interfered somehow with the display screens, which was slightly disturbing. How was there a biological function related to the screens that something ingested could have an effect on the output? Randidly let that train of thought drop. Likely pointless to dwell on it at this point. Haltingly, with several drunken steps toward the same abrupt failure as the Friends tab, the status screen came into focus, and Randidly counted his gains. His hands slowly balled into fists. He'd gained 2 skills without realizing it. Mana engraving and mental fortitude. The first was rather obvious from his work with Sam, but the second made him slightly curious, so he clicked on the description. Mental fortitude. Ability to handle mental strain caused by overexertion. Can be a natural or learned skill. Will provide small bonuses to resisting mental effects. Ability to recover from mental tiredness increases with skill level. Ability to utilize multiple spells at once increases with skill level. Randidly figured this was probably related to him pushing more aggressively on learning to control his root manipulation and summon pestilence. It also seemed like he was 30% of the way through creating another skill, based on the strange exercises given to him by the old turtle. It was nice to see it was actually working, and that the turtle wasn't just hiding somewhere laughing at him. With that problem solved, Randidly turned to look at the amount of skill levels he gained. As he looked at the total next to path points, he couldn't help but grin. In order of increasing magnitude, Randidly gained 3 skill levels in manual labor and cooking, 4 levels in potion making, refine, meditation, and mana strengthening, 5 levels in circle of flame, calculated blow, and agony, 6 levels in pierce the skies, shatter the earth, 8 skill levels in mental fortitude and incinerating bolt, and 10 levels in ghastly slash and fighting proficiency. In addition, Randidly also gained 13 levels in Haste, Grace, and Eyes of the Spear Phantom, 14 levels in Summon Pestilence, Empower, and Mana Engraving, 15 levels in Phantom Thrust, and 16 levels in Physical Fitness. And to put the icing on the training cake, he'd gained 19 levels in Bacterial Regeneration, 20 levels in Spear Mastery, 21 levels in Spear Phantom's Footwork, and a monstrous 31 levels in Root Manipulation. Even so, Randidly knew he gained something else, too. Rather, something he recognized about himself. That he possessed the strength and execution to push himself further than he thought he could go. And not just when his life was on the line. He had the discipline to continue for weeks under a harsh environment, reaching new heights. All in all, his path point total read 282. Randidly quickly used 17 path points to finish off the Empower 1 path. Congratulations, you have completed the Empower 1 path. The strength in your body is ephemeral, and you grow increasingly skilled in its manipulation. Although the path here was desolate and without reward, as you turn to regard the distance crossed behind you, you cannot help but marvel on how far you have come. Stamina plus 30. You have learned the skill Battle Intent, level 1. Battle Intent. Your strength now flows slightly beyond the bounds of your body and is discernible by others. Ability to gauge the strength of others of similar or lesser strength increases with skill level. Ability to influence others with your battle intent increases with skill level. Ability to resist the influence of other intents increases with skill level. Ability to slightly control how strong you seem increases with skill level. Randidly thought the skill seemed rather useless currently, but it contained potential. Being able to influence was a rather general statement, but anything helped, especially in a tight battle. And if it could be used to resist the influence of others. The one thing that gave him pause was the fact it simply said you could resist other intents, without specifying battle intent, meaning there were likely other intents available. But he could experiment with that another time. For now, Randidly looked at the paths available to him. Watcher, 0 out of unknown. Unknown. Heretic 5, 0 out of unknown. Oathbreaker, 0 out of 25. Initiate of Ash, 1, 0 out of 75. Path of Carnage, 1, 0 out of unknown. Fighting Proficiency, 1, 0 out of 90. Root Manipulation, 1, 0 out of 85. Advanced Physical Fitness, 0 out of 100. Nexus Traveler Cohort 5, 0 out of 50. Again, if he wasn't going to take a class, he sure as hell wasn't going to risk taking Heretic and somehow weirdly ending up with a class through it. Watcher he had for a while, but didn't interest him because he already had Eyes of the Spear Phantom. Oathbreaker was also another long-standing one, but he wasn't sure he wanted whatever rewards an Oathbreaker would receive. Initiate of Ash definitely had some allure, only Randidly wanted to power up a little further before he took that path, which made him consider asking Shawl about patrons, and more information in general about paths. If they had some sort of database to inform young individuals which patrons to choose and not choose, it would make a lot of sense. Over time, there would probably be enough people who made it to the apprentice path to unlock at least that much, and give them an idea of which ones were the best choices, based on bonuses and mortality rates. Path of Carnage was still intriguing, but was likely a chain path of an unknown length. Even though Randidly had 265 path points left, it might be better to put it into subjects he knew would be beneficial to him, taking advantage of the skills and stats in areas where he would use them more often. Nexus Traveler Cohort 5 path was a terrible name, but it was likely some bonus for traveling to a world in the fifth cohort. It was hard to tell whether this bonus would be a big one or a